fly from Iron Maiden.
This is Steve from Iron Maiden.
This is Mike D from Strachan Your Vital.
Bruce here from Iron Maiden. I'd like to wish you all happy Christmas. I wish all of you wherever you are a very happy New Year.
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 Hello and welcome to another edition of Then and Now, How History Affects Current Events, one of the WHFR Forum series of locally produced talk shows every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Then and Now is currently presented on the fifth Tuesday of the month's Having One. And now your host, Ned Apigian.
Well, our guest today is none other than my dear friend Alice Nigorossian, former associate or deputy director. Alice, what is it, of the Wayne State University Press?
Yeah, that's correct.
So Alice knows how to read, and we have a lot of stuff that we want to read today in our program. But first, let me backtrack a moment. We are recording this program on the 18th of December, and it is the policy of this radio station here at Henry Ford Community College that during the holiday week, the subject of our material should be related to the holidays, Christmas, and the New Year. And in order to satisfy that requirement, I've chosen the following subjects, and we're not really interviewing somebody as we usually do. Without considering so much the religious aspect, we're not selling any religious idea here, is we're giving basically the to comprehend the differences between the calendars of the Julian and the Gregorian calendars. Most of us have heard those things, but we don't know the history of how they developed. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk something about the Orthodox or Eastern Rite churches in America. And one of the problems with that, as I've seen it, is come December 25th, we don't hear jingle bells anymore. Everything goes back to normal when, in fact, the Eastern Rite churches celebrate Christmas on January 6th and or 7th, which has to do with differences in the confusion of calendars that were changed and adopted at different times. So we're going to go into that history. And those of you that ever wondered about that great Christmas song, The 12 Days of Christmas, will now get an idea what's the meaning of that 12 Days of Christmas, because when you count the days from the normal Western Christmas on December the 25th, you count 12 days, guess where you end up? You end up with January 6th, which in this case the Armenian Church celebrates, and many of the other Orthodox or Eastern Rite churches celebrate on January 7th. We're going to learn a lot about the reasons for that, and I hope you enjoy it, and I suggest that you get a pen and a piece of paper so that you might want to write some of this information down. As we were researching it, we were so dumbfounded as to what we found. Alice, if I'm reading something and you feel compelled that you would like to jump in and make a comment about something, when I reach the end of a paragraph of a particular idea, that's what we'll do. Well, now you know why the subject of our program Then and Now this month is not the general historical one, but one that has something to do with the holidays, and we think this definitely falls right in between the two holidays. This program is broadcasted to you on December the 29th, 4 days after the Western adopted Christmas, and about 4 days before New Year's Day. And in our subject of today, we are going to see that New Year's Day has floated around a little bit too, and that's really amazing, Jay. I'm telling you the truth. Well,
I
here goes.
You,
anyway, here we're going to go. Get your pencil and paper ready. Today, Americans are used to a calendar with a year based on the Earth's rotation around the sun, with months having no relationship to the cycle of the moon and New Year's Day falling on January 1st. However, that system was not adopted in England and its colonies until 1752. The changes implemented that year have created challenges for historians and genealogists working with early colonial records, since it is sometimes hard to determine whether information was entered according to the then current English calendar or the new style calendar as we use today. Throughout history, there have been numerous attempts to convey time in relationship to the sun and the moon. Even now, the Chinese and Islamic calendars are based on the motion of the moon around the earth, rather than the motion of the earth in relationship to the sun. And the Jewish calendar links years to the cycle of the sun and the months to the cycle of the moon. Now, let's take a minute from that reading that I'm trying to give you. You can see how confusing all this is. Alice, what do you think of that?
Well, it is, but I wanted to add something to these dates. It appears that Russia remained on the Julian calendar until 1917, after the Russian Revolution, which was called the October Revolution, but because of the change to the Gregorian calendar, it actually took place in November. And Greece stayed on the Julian calendar until 1923. So you can see with all the different countries on different calendars how confusing this might have been.
Well, that seems a little contradictory to some of the information here. Let's see what happens when we continue with it. So the Julian calendar, when was it invented? Well, it was invented in 45 BC by none other than Julius Caesar, ordered a calendar consisting of 12 months based on a solar year. This calendar employed a cycle of 3 years of 365 days, following by a year of 366 days, leap year, of course. When first implemented, the Julian calendar also moved the beginning of the year from March 1st to January 1st. However, following the fall of the Roman Empire in the 5th century, the new year was gradually realigned to coincide with the Christian festivals until, by the 7th century, Christmas Day marked the beginning of the new year in many countries. That's something new, that's for sure. By the 9th century, parts of southern Europe began observing first day of the new year as March 25th to coincide with the Annunciation Day. What is Annunciation Day? The church holiday 9 months prior to Christmas, celebrated by the angel Gabriel's visitation to the Virgin Mary that she was to be the mother of the Messiah. Let's take a minute to digest that. I don't know how many times I've heard that. I don't know how many times most of you that are not 100% religious have heard that, but that's what Annunciation is. The Annunciation by the angel Gabriel to the mother-to-be Mary that she was to give birth to the Messiah. Anyway, let's continue. The last day of the year was March 24th. However, England did not adopt this change in the beginning of the new year until the late 12th century. Because the year began in March, records referring to the first month pertain to March, to the second month pertain to April, etc., so that the 19th, of the 12th month would be February 19th. Imagine that. In fact, in Latin, September means 7th. October means 8th month. November means the 9th month. And December, the 10th month, after Dessa. Dessa means 10, right? Use of numbers rather than names of the month was especially prevalent in Quaker records. Alice, do you have something to add to that?
I was going to continue. During the Middle Ages, it became apparent that the Julian leap year formula had overcompensated for the actual length of a solar year, having added an extra day every 128 years.
Well, we don't want to get too ahead of the ancient times, but that's also interesting. Anyway, now we're going to go into the second category, the Gregorian calendar. What is the Gregorian calendar? This is the one we're using today, folks. It says, and they'll give you the reason why we're talking about the Gregorian calendar, why it's named Gregorian. During the Middle Ages, it began to become apparent that the Julian leap year formula had overcompensated for the actual length of a solar year. Having added an extra day every 128 years, however, no adjustments were made to compensate for that. By 1582, seasonal equinoxes were falling 10 days too early. Imagine that. 10 days too early. And you can't change seasonal equinoxes, ladies and gentlemen. So they realized they had a problem. And some church holidays, such as Easter, did not always fall in the proper seasons. In that year, Pope Gregory XIII authorized, and most Roman Catholic countries adopted, the, guess what, Gregorian calendar, or the New Style calendar. As part of the change, 10 days were dropped from the month of October, and the formula for determining leap year was revised so that only years, I guess, divisible by 400, meaning 1600 or 2000, at the end of a century, would be leap years. January 1 was established as the first day of the new year, back to what Julius Caesar wanted to do. Protestant countries, including England and its colonies, did not recognize the authority of the Pope and continued to use the Julian calendar with all of its confusing parts. Well, Alice, what can you add to that?
Well, I think with all the confusion, it was very fortunate that Pope Gregory recommended the Gregorian calendar be adopted. And it was a slow change. Not every country went into it at the same time, but at least that was a beginning to get this all sorted out.
It seems to be a slight contradiction as to what you read a little bit before about 1917. That seems to be a little mysterious to me. But let's go into the next category. The next category is called double dating, which means there's a period in time, especially, let's say, in the Protestant or English traditions and the English colonies, where they use two dates, which, if that wasn't confusing enough, the question was, what do you do with it? So anyway, here is the story of double dating. So between 1582, when Pope Gregory decided that he was going to suggest his change, in 1752, a period of about 170 years exactly, or 200, no, 170 years, not only were two calendars in use in Europe and in European colonies, but two different starts of the year were in use in England. Although the legal year began on March 25th, the use of the Gregorian calendar by other European countries led to January 1st becoming commonly celebrated as New Year's Day and given as the first day in the year in all almanacs. To avoid misrepresentation, both the old style and the new style year were often used in English and in English colonial records for dates falling between the new year, January 1st, and the old year, beginning on March 25th, a system known as double dating. Such dates are usually identified by a slash, a forward slash, today in computer talk, breaking the old style date and the new style year. For example, March 19th, is 1631/2, whatever that's unusual, I don't get that. So it must be March 2nd then. The difference in the days.
No, it's 3132, 1631, 1632 is what the reference is to.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah.
So March 19th, 1631 is what, Alice?
This is an example of how a writer might indicate a specific year, but it looks like there's a year difference here. So that's
not very clear.
No, it's not.
So occasionally, writers would express the double date with a hyphen. For example, again, March 19th, 1631, hyphen 32. Well, that makes it exactly a year off. It can't be.
Right, exactly.
The Connecticut Library needs to get its act together where I got this information from. So, in general, double dating was more common in civil than in church and ecclesiastical records. So that pretty much brings that subject to an end of double dating. Now we know when someone talks about double dating and we're talking about calendars, we're not talking about four couples going out to dinner together.
Yeah. Well, Ned, let me add this. I'm trying to understand the double dating because the new year in some places was actually January 1st, but in some countries it began March 25. The fact that the reference of March 19, depending on when New Year's Day was celebrated, it could fall in one year or the next.
Well, at this time, we have to take a station identification break. You are listening to Then and Now, and I am your host, Ned Apigian, and our guest today is none other than Alice Nigorossian, the former Associate Director of the Wayne State Library.
University Press.
University Press, that's right. Thank God. I'm over here doing this live program. I'd be mixed up. So, Then and Now is a program where which we discuss how history affects current events and the mystery of why certain things happen the way they are. Usually their roots are in the past. Today, we're not doing that. We're talking about the history of the differences in the establishment of the two calendars we use in the West, not the Chinese, not the Islamic calendar, but the Julian calendar and the Gregorian calendar. And later on, we'll go into Christmas traditions as to how this is all affected. This program is brought to you on WHFR.fm. at 89.3 FM on your radio dial, and it is brought to you on the fifth Tuesday of every month from 1 to 2 p.m. Now, we are broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College, and we're making these wonderful waves for your entertainment and education. Now back to our subject matter. We have a new category, in this category has to do with the changes of 1752. My God, I would have thought, I thought before that somewhere along when Pope Gregory decided to make the correction, that the rest of the world went along. But dear listeners, that's not what happened. It took to 1752, in accordance with a 1750 Act of Parliament, England and its colonies changed calendars in 1752. By that time, the discrepancies between a solar year and the Julian calendar had grown by an additional day, so that the calendar used in England and its colonies was 11 days out of sync with the Gregorian calendar in use in most parts of the of Europe. Alice, what do you think of that?
Well, it's very, very interesting.
Okay. I thought you were going to give us a little comment, more comment.
No, I mean, I didn't know if you wanted me to repeat the statement that I made earlier about how Russia remained on the Julian calendar until 1917.
Well, that seems to be a little mix-up here. Russia should have been on the Julian calendar since 15. Maybe not. Anyway, well, we already heard that, so I think there's a little story that I had mentioned to you, this difference in the calendar, that during one of the Napoleonic Wars, and we're dealing with 18, much after 1752, where the Tsarist Russian army was supposed to be someplace on a battlefield, and the German or the Prussian armies were supposed to meet, and they were supposed to, their actions were supposed to coincide, and the Russians didn't show up for 11 days. It's not that they were, they knew what the date was. They were overcompensating for what they thought the Germans or whoever it was supposed to meet them to fight this battle against Napoleon. As a consequence of that mix-up, Napoleon won that battle because the Russians didn't show up. I wish I had the date of that battle, but we couldn't find it. But
yeah, I did quite a bit of research and just could not come up with it.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it is written about in probably one of the military books.
Lord have mercy. You could see how history affects current events. That's a big one. This calendar could have caused a nightmare. Okay, now we're going to go into which calendar is it? Out of context, it is sometimes hard to determine whether information in colonial records was entered as old style or new style. So if you want to do some historical research, you got your hands full now. Some examples. In the public records of the colony of Connecticut, a court at Newtown, Hartford, on December 27, 1636, is immediately followed by a court held on the 21st of February, 1636. Which is followed in turn by a court at Hartford, M, on the 28th of 1637. Although it may appear that the February session was entered out of sequence, the arrangement is actually correct. Under the old style calendar and the legal new year, 1636 began on March 25th. This March 25th, New Year, remember that, people. Not December in 1636, was followed by January of 1636 and February of 1636, and 1636 continued through March 24th, not 25th, it changes the year. The Warwick patent is dated the 19th of March in the seventh year of ye reign of our sovereign Lord Charles by ye grace of God, King of England, Scotland, France, and Ireland, defender of ye faith. And I hate to tell you something about the spelling of these things. They're all different. Anyway, although not double-dated, the historical content indicates that the date as recorded was old-style. If double-dated, it would have been recorded as March 19th. if recorded Newt's style, it would be recorded as March 19th, 1632, not 1631.
Ned, let me correct you. It would have the 1631/32. The new style would just give 1 year.
Well,
okay.
It's interesting, but Lord have mercy. Now you know the confusion that that caused and why they decided at a later date to get their act together. So we have now concluded with that, and we are not going to go into the bibliography of why all this happened and what's the significance of it. The significance is absolutely clear. We had total, absolute confusion until this Gregorian calendar was adopted by everyone. And that, Alice, takes us to your article that you were reading about this. Didn't realize that the... I could understand why Pope Gregory, now makes sense, was the Catholic Pope. And, of course, Russia is an Orthodox country. Therefore, would not pay much attention to what the Catholic Pope said, and therefore maintained the Julian calendar, and that hence caused the confusion. Alice, you want to elaborate on that while I'm looking for my next topic?
Okay, this is about Eastern Christianity, which refers collectively to the Christian traditions and churches which developed in the Balkans, Eastern Europe, Asia Minor, the Middle East, Northeastern Africa, and Southern India over several centuries of religious antiquity. Eastern Christians do not have a shared religious tradition, but many of these groups have shared cultural traditions. Today, there are four main branches of families of Eastern Christianity, each of which has distinct theology and dogma. It's the Assyrian Church of the East, the Eastern Orthodox Churches, the Oriental Orthodox Churches, and the Eastern Catholic Churches. I'm going to give you an indication of what falls within the Oriental Orthodox Churches. The Armenian Apostolic Orthodox Church, the Syriac Orthodox Church, which also includes a Jacobite Syrian Church, Indian Orthodox Church, Coptic Orthodox, British Orthodox, French Coptic Orthodox, Ethiopian Orthodox, Eritrean Orthodox, and these are all self-governing. The term that's used is autocephalous.
Well, that's interesting. By this, there's something I didn't realize. There was a British and a French Orthodox Church. We do know, we should know, that the Ethiopian, the Coptic Church, is an Orthodox Church. If you want to simplify it, I just refer to them as Eastern Rite churches, in other words, non-Roman Catholic. One of the things I'd like to remind you, if you remember during the Pope's recent funeral, after a certain point, the Eastern Rite churches under the Pope took over as part of his funeral, and the music changed. It got a lot more Middle Eastern, if any of you remember it. All of a sudden, it wasn't the Latin church. The Latin music was a little dull. When the Eastern Rite churches came into effect, they generally, the music was different. And I remember talking to my wife and say, look at the difference in the music. And that's when the religious figures dressed in their Eastern garb under the Pope took over the part of the ceremony. And Alice, why don't you continue with that?
Okay.
I think we have some four basic categories.
Right.
So we don't...
Right. The next category is the autocephalic churches. This includes the Church of Constantinople, Greek Church of Alexandria. I'm just going to list these. Antioch, Jerusalem, Moscow, Greece, Georgia, Serbia, Romania, Bulgaria, Cyprus, Albania, Poland, the Church of Slovakia, and the Czech lands, and the Orthodox Church in America. In addition to that, we have autonomous churches, the Church of Sinai, the Jerusalem Patriarchate, the Orthodox Church of Finland, the Church of Estonia, the Church of Japan, the Church of Ukraine, the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia. And then beyond that, we have the Church of Ukraine. It's the Kiev Patriarchate, the Ukrainian Autocephalous Orthodox Church, and the Church of Macedonia.
Well, one thing that when we're talking about autonomous, both Alice and I have Armenian heritage. The Catholic Church is much more monotheolytic. Here in these churches, they actually, there's a lot more democracy in with the parishioners. Voting for the pastor, voting, going to conventions, electing the bishop, and then at conclaves of which each region, say the United States or Greece, or send representatives to a international conclave, those delegates actually elect the so-called pope. So you can see what autonomous means. They are actually, that's why they're probably autonomous and not directly related to the pope, is they have this independence, and there's a lot of autonomy of the average parishioner has a lot to say as to what goes on. It's almost like a Protestant church in its liberalism. Continue, Alice.
That does it for the list, but I did want to explain this. All of the Eastern churches, as well as the Western churches, share a common Christian tradition and most of the same Christian biblical canon. Many Eastern churches also share traditional practices in common which are not shared by the Western churches, but there is no particular tradition that distinguishes non-Western churches from Western churches. But I think I wanted to mention the calendar about how that affects when Easter is celebrated in some of the churches, that because the some of the churches still celebrate probably using the Julian calendar, and some use the Gregorian, so there's sometimes a several-week span between two different Easter celebrations.
Of the Eastern Rite churches talking about.
Right, exactly.
For example, the Greeks celebrate Christmas on December 25th, but they do Easter on the other calendar.
Right.
That's the confusion you're getting to, I think. But it almost doesn't make sense why you'd use the Julian calendar for one. But it's not unusual. Later, I have a piece that I'm going to read which clarifies some of these things about Annunciation and the Theophany, the birth of Christ. It's a mixture with his baptism. And we'll get to that in the second half of the program. But we have these anomalies of which our own pastor told me yesterday that in Jerusalem only, the Armenian church does Christmas on January 18th. Now, in a thing I'm going to read a little later, we might have some insight as to January 18th. That's 12 days, right? It's approximately 11 or 12 days. You got to remember, the big difference is 11 and 12 days. And remember that song I told you about, the 12 days of Christmas? Well, that's what that 12 days is all about. Isn't that interesting? I didn't know that. But it's almost time again for me to do the station break. And we are getting into the second half of our program. And you are listening to Then and Now. Then and Now is a monthly radio program presented on the fifth Tuesday of every month, our new time, from 1 to 2 p.m. here on WHFR 89.3 FM on your dial. And Then and Now is a program that discusses how history affects current events. It's just like our topic today. if you didn't understand these differences and the reasons for them and how they came about, you might not appreciate what happened in the past, because usually what happens in the past has a definite effect on what's going on today. You always hear the question, why are these people at each other's throat? About what and why? Well, a good example is recently, I'm getting off the topic, I'll get back to it later, let me continue. You are listening to Then and Now. I am your host, Ned Apigyan, and today our special guest is Alice Nigorossian, and she's going to give us our title. So she is the former
Associate Director of Wayne State University Press.
Don't get that close to the microphone. Anyway, you got to talk over it, past it, not directly into it. And anyway, she's here to help us today, because you would be bored to death if I just sat here and read all this stuff to you in my voice. And I'm a big believer into a female voice, a male voice, stopping the reading of information and making comment about it, because that's what gives the program a little humanity.
Ned, well, can I interrupt for a second?
Sure.
I want to tell you about a true experience I had visiting Jerusalem in the 80s. And the way the timing had worked out, we had already celebrated Palm Sunday and Easter here. And then I went there for the visit, and this young Armenian man says, well, you're going to come to church on Sunday. We're having Palm Sunday. He goes, what? We already celebrated Palm Sunday. So when I asked one of the derhars, that's Armenian for priest, I said, how come you're celebrating it so late? He turned to me and he said, why are you celebrating it so early?
Well, that's, but what I found out, only in Jerusalem is that done 12 days later. We're going to get to it later. I'm going to read a piece about that. Now the reason for all this is, if I didn't make it clear at the beginning of the program, is that we in America have made a big issue, and it's been a thorn in my side, that, you know, Christmas is December 25th, and after that, everything else doesn't count. But in the meantime, what we have done, we've tried to make, to accommodate everybody. Of course, the Jewish community there are no Jewish Christians. Yes, there are. There are Jews for Jesus, but they're celebrated. They follow Jewish traditions, and they do celebrate the birth of Christ. And then they had to discover a holiday in their tradition, which they didn't feel left out of this. So now Hanukkah, which is a relatively minor Jewish celebration, as I understood it, not really commemorated anywhere else, but it was discovered and it was near Christmas time. And therefore, that is now it's not politically correct to talk about Christmas without mentioning Hanukkah. Somebody ought to give you a lesson as to what Hanukkah is all about. And I don't know how holy it is, what it has to do with, but almost everything that has to do with Judaism is, I guess, religious. And then we had to invent Kwanzaa. This is to make the African-Americans feel like they had a special date. And here we have a definite Christian holiday, where the Eastern Rite churches celebrate their Christmas on January 6th or 7th, and it is absolutely, completely ignored. Now, I don't think it's necessary to keep the holiday music, Jingle Bells and White Christmas, going from December 26th all the way through January 6th or 7th, but it would be nice if in the newspapers and on the news some recognition is given to the fact that there's a substantial part of Christendom that recognizes these dates as the dates for the celebration of Christmas. So That's why I've kind of emphasized that today. That's one of the, it's all part of the education of the two forms of Christianity, which the Eastern Rite churches, as you heard from Alice's breakdown of the various churches, it was almost like the Protestant Reformation, as various ethnic groups had their own Orthodox churches, like the Romanian Orthodox or the Bulgarian Orthodox. And you'll find this divisions, as she was mentioning to you. Whereas even there are some Catholic rites that are, again, in the East, who are part of the Catholic Church, but have specifically related to ethnicity. We have in the Armenian community, as we know, an Armenian Catholic Church, and if you went to it, you would see no difference between it and the Armenian Orthodox rite and you'd wonder what's the difference. The only difference is they talk about remembering the Catholic Pope, and that's their big difference. But other than that, if you attend the Mass, they even still turn their back to the audience. They're not facing forward. So the Eastern Rite Church has a lot of pieces to it, and that probably is the reason why it's not treated very well by the press in general. But the whole point of this program is that this is the holiday week. We are between the Western Christmas of December the 25th, and we are between that and January the 6th and 7th, and then right in the middle of that is New Year. So what are we doing today? We're going to give you all this information about the calendars and the New Year. It was March 25th, now it's January 1st, but it began on January 1st, and it was solar influenced, and so on and so forth. So this program's purpose during this holiday week is to bring this religious aspect to the holiday, and the issue of the calendars and New Year's Day is a perfect idea to solve the problem of what does then and now talk about during its time when it's on the air in this holiday season. That's the reason for it. And we are not particularly selling any religious or one faith over another. We're just explaining that where these differences come from. And now I notice my volumes are down, and I don't understand why. But let's continue. Alice, do you have something you could add on to about the Orthodox churches where you left off?
Every year since 1920, the celebration has taken place in Tarpon Springs, and Epiphany commemorates the baptism of Jesus in the River Jordan, when the Holy Spirit descended upon him in the form of a dove. The day begins with a divine liturgy, then there's a liturgy procession, which makes its way on the streets of Tarpon to the bayou, and the Archbishop blesses the waters, prays for calm seas and the safety of sailors, and he casts a white cross into the waters, and a young woman releases a dove. The dive for the cross is a highlight of the Epiphany events. Locals believe that retrieving the cross will ensure a year of good luck and blessing. About 40 to 50 boys aged 16 to 18 dive to retrieve the cross, and it's made from a single piece of wood. When the young man finds the cross, he's greeted with wild cheers of delight, and the procession carries him back to the church, where there's a short service held to bless the diver. And then there's a celebration in a park nearby where there's Greek food and music and dancing. In fact, the dancers dress in costumes that are native to their villages. The young man and his entourage walk through the city of Tarpon, visiting stores and restaurants throughout the city, and they bless everyone with holy water. And that celebration continues into the early evening hours. And it really is special. I have attended it over the last 10 years and enjoy it very, very much. I wanted to share that real experience that continues in the United States, and it also occurs in Greece. So it's a way of bringing the old world to the new world.
Well, hopefully, gotta turn my mic on, else you won't hear me. Well, so much for how the Greeks celebrate Epiphany in Florida. Now you know there are other traditions. Now let's get into one of the major differences of Christmas, January 6th versus December 25th. This is an ecclesiastical document about the Armenian Church, and of course an Eastern Rite Church, also founded by the original disciples of Christ. And the answer goes as follows. Why do we, Armenians, celebrate Christmas on January the 6th as opposed to December 25th? The answer to this question is not as plain nor as obvious as one might at first presume. Yes, while it is true that we really don't know when exactly Jesus was born, the fact remains that he was born, although God's self-revelation in human history makes the actual date of this glorious celebration moot, and quite actually besides the point. In fact, during the very early years of the Christian church, his birthday was not celebrated at all. Many early church fathers omit it entirely from their lists of feasts. Without going into the history of all the pagan window dressing associated with the modern Yuletide season, Christmas tree, the log, and all this, the true celebrations, according to the ancient tradition of the church, was a culmination of events related to God's incarnation. This was not called Christmas, but rather Theophany, a Greek word which means the revelation of God, and was universally celebrated on January 6th by all Christendom, highlighted by the remembrance of Jesus' baptism. Although ironically today, Christmas is a celebration of Jesus' birthday, it wasn't until later that the Nativity was incorporated into the January 6th celebrations of the Theophany. This is an important distinction. The question about dates must be answered in two parts. There are actually only two dates for the observance of Jesus' birth, and not four. They are December 25th and January 6th. The confusion of the other two dates, January 7th and the 18th, are due to the use of two calendars, the Gregorian and the Julian, as we already spoke about. While most of the known world, such as Canada, is on the Gregorian calendar, named after Pope Gregory of Rome, and we know, which he insisted on in 1582, some Orthodox Christians maintain their liturgical calendars according to the ancient Julian calendar. Thus, the January 7th date actually corresponds with the January 25th on the old Julian calendar, and then on January 19th corresponds to January 6th, that's another 12 days, on the Gregorian calendar. What's this January 19th? It's where in Jerusalem they celebrate Christmas, at least the Armenians do. Those who observe January 7th, which is actually December 25th on the Julian calendar, are referred to as old calendarists. Despite the calendar usage, all these churches observe the Epiphany, or the baptism of Jesus, 12 days following the Nativity. Those of you who are Catholic know of Epiphany is celebrated, sometimes referred to as Little Christmas, on January 6th. Not blown up, not a big deal. But the Eastern Rite churches, the Armenian church in particular, and I'm sure several others that don't mix up the Julian calendar with the Gregorian, do their Christmas, the Nativity, the birth of Christ, and his baptism on the same date. Now, secondly, the Armenians who observe the Gregorian calendar, except in Jerusalem, as I've indicated, maintain to this day the ancient date of January 6th as the dual celebration of Jesus' birth and baptism. Where all the major events related to the Theophany are recalled from the revelation of Jesus as the Son of Man, the incarnate Word, to his revelation as the Son of God, the Prince of Peace, and the King of Heaven. This is a statement I'm reading from a religious document. Nothing that we're selling here. We're only pointing out why these differences in the dates and this education of the calendar illustrates that point. Therefore, this celebration, including everything from the Nativity of Christ in Bethlehem, the visitation of the Magi who came to witness him as the divine revelation, the infancy narrative, his naming, his presentation to the temple. These are Jewish traditional things that are done that we're seeing here. 40 days after the birth of a Jewish son, or I guess daughter as well, they're taken to the temple. I don't know what's so magical about 40 days, but 40 days is the number. His circumcision and finally the epiphany of his baptism in the River Jordan, whereby his formal ministry of redemption was inaugurated by opening of the heavens, the descent of God, the Holy Spirit in the form of a dove, and the voice of God the Father proclaiming, "This is my beloved Son." The dual theophany, epiphany, was celebrated on January 6th until the 5th century, when the Council of Chalcedon, 451, formally declared December 25th as the date for the celebration of Christmas, separating the Nativity from the baptism of Christ by, quote, unquote, the 12 days of Christmas remembered today in a popular carol. So that's not a foolish carol. It was a lot in there that made a lot of sense that needed to be understood. Now, although there are many compelling theories as to the reasons for moving the celebration of the Nativity to December 25th, suffice it to say that it is generally believed that the date was changed in order to override and subdue pagan feasts and practices dedicated to the winter solstice. Because at the time Christians also used to continue their observances of these pagan festivals. The pagans called this celebration Saturnalia, in honor of their god Saturn, a festival lasting from the 17th to the 25th of December, culminating with the birth of the unconquerable sun as the days begin to lengthen, because among pagans it was generally believed that the sun who dies during the winter solstice rises from death thereafter. So this program is being pre-recorded on December 18th, and we're right in the middle of that period, you should know. Since the date of the Epiphany or baptism was more ancient and was the primary importance as a liturgical feast, it was not possible to move it, while the secondary and later edition of the Nativity could be moved without great offense. Armenia, however, whose Christianity is of ancient apostolic origins, which means that the original disciples went to Armenia, did not adopt the change for the simple fact that there were no such pagan practices left in Armenia in the 5th century, allowing them to remain faithful to the traditions of their forefathers. And to this day, Armenia has continued to celebrate the Nativity on January 6th, along with the Epiphany, which is crowned, as with other Orthodox churches, in the observance of Christ's baptism with the glorious blessing of the waters, in whose climax a cross is plunged into the water as a sign of God's saving mystery in Christ's life from the womb to the tomb. The blessed water is offered to all as a sign of God's manifestation in the glorious waters of the Jordan, from which the Savior was revealed, and it becomes possible for humanity to be born again into new life. As I mentioned, these are religious philosophies which we are not promoting here. What we are promoting is the fact that we are discussing the validity of these dates as to why one is one follows the other, the differences, the calendar, all these things tie together to illustrate the historical differences, why do certain people in the Orthodox tradition celebrate their Christmas on the 6th and the 7th. And now, if that's of interest to you, you have a pretty good idea as to why this is all happening. I hope that you find this as important and entertaining, as well as educational, and will share the thoughts of this program with your friends. Remember that you can re-listen to this program by going on the internet and typing in WHFR.FM. You'll come to our homepage, and then you'll see forum button. There are four buttons. One is forum. You hit the forum button, and if you're patient, you'll get some classical music, and you will know, wait, and then a calendar will come up showing all the dates. And if you want to listen to this program or have any one of your friends listen to it again, all you have to do is select the fifth Tuesday of the month or select December 29th, press the button, and you'll hear this program again. And in previous programs, you can also do the same thing by selecting the fourth Saturday of every month from September 8, 2009 forward, and you will hear the other programs that I have presented in the past. Alice, you have something to say to say goodbye?
Well, I wanted to mention, this whole, the differences in the calendar of an experience that I had when I visited Jerusalem in the 80s, that I happened to have already celebrated Easter here, and I went over there and found out that they hadn't. And when I questioned the priest there, I said, "Why are you celebrating this so late?" And he said, "Why do you celebrate it so early?" So it's ongoing now.
Well, with that, we'll have to end. As you can see, there's confusion. We didn't understand the differences in calendars, and we hope you do now, and hope to hear from you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Then and Now, How History Affects Current Events, with your host, Ned Dapigian. Then and Now is one of the WHFR Forum series of locally produced talk shows on every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. Then and Now is currently presented on the fifth Tuesday of the month's Having One. You can listen to all of the Forum shows, including Then and Now, on our website, www.whfr.fm. Click on Forum and the date of the first broadcast. Again, thank you for listening to Then and Now on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
Do you find it difficult to find the time to work out? Does the price of a gym membership seem too expensive? Don't let these reasons get in the way of exercising. Try the Henry Ford Community College Fitness Center. The HFCC Fitness Center is conveniently located on campus in the Athletic Memorial Building. Drop in between classes or before you go home for the day. You'll save valuable time because you won't have to commute to a gym. And the best part is that use of the fitness center is free to HFCC students. Students should bring their student ID for access. Lockers are available for no charge, but you must provide your own lock. Come and work out at the HFCC Fitness Center.
Listen, was that you?
This entire piece of music was played with only two instruments, a right hand and a left hand. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life with hands-only CPR. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands-only CPR is recommended by the American Heart Association, and it's incredibly easy and effective. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. The power to help save a life is in your hands. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Mark
Fester,
Cooner,
and Pauly of Edgewise. You're listening to 89.3 WHFR, the station making waves.
Making waves.
Waves.
Ta-da!
WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm Jeff, and you are listening to One Chord to Another, where every week I try to bring you some of the best new and slightly used indie rock and pop out in the world today. I hope you had a great Christmas, not too long ago, just the other day, last week. So hope you got everything you wanted. It was good to have the family around and get some gifts. Always a pleasure. So that's pretty cool. So I hope you enjoyed yours as well. This week is going to be a little bit different on the show, and that's because it's theme week here at WHFR, and the theme for this week is Best of 2009. So that is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to try and bring you some of what I thought was the best tunes of 2009. And there's not going to be any pretension on this list at all. It's not going to be a list of artsy fartsy music that might make it onto other lists that you see of best of whatever year that it is. So to prove that point, I'm going to start the show off with a band that I think you